Okay, so I will first ask if there are any announcements. Well, people have been getting emails from me for the past week about the AGU abstract deadline, which is tomorrow evening. And I have looked. We have each of the sessions has between about 3 and 7 abstracts, with the exception of the K-12 session, and I think that has now 14 abstracts. So we're moving forward, but if any of you is either you yourself might submit an abstract that you haven't really considered yet, or you know somebody who might be inclined to submit an abstract, the variety of sessions is quite large. And so people should be able to find some place where they fit. My guess is that once the abstract deadline has passed, depending on the number of abstracts in the session, some of them will be combined, and we're hoping to help guide that combination since there are so many sessions that do overlap. Mm-hmm. So I have asked the conveners to start thinking about which sessions they think theirs might be most amenable to combining with. So, but we'll see how things play out by the end of tomorrow.
What will that mean for invited speakers?
Well, what it means is that the conveners of the combined sessions will have to talk about it, and they could either potentially give all the invited speakers the oral slots if they're given one and an oral slot, and or they could negotiate and have some of them be posters, which the invited speakers might not be happy about, but it might be necessary to do that. It also depends on how many abstracts each group has. Last year, the session I was convening had about 20 abstracts, and we were combined with a session that had 2. And actually, those 2 abstracts ended up being divided between 2 of our sessions because we were divided by Kate. I was convening the K-12 session, and one of the abstracts in the other session we were combined with was more appropriate for higher ed. So in that case, that abstract just ended up being a poster. So I suppose it depends on the proportion of abstracts you have and the conveners. But there's no guarantees about anything. I don't know, are there any other insights about the AGU process that can be brought
to you? I would just say thank you, Tamara, for organizing it so well.
Yes, I second that.
And for being tenacious, Tamara, I'm working on a matchup, I promise. It's Caroline.
Okay. Oh, terrific. That's great, Caroline. I was hoping you would.
No, your tenacity is paying off. Good.
Well, one of the things that that's different this year from last year, at least from my perspective, in terms of trying to get people to contribute abstracts, is last year we had 7 sessions which, from my perspective, were quite distinct and helped people sort of identify where they best fit. This year, because we had so much interest from conveners convening much more specialized sessions, from my perspective, I could see that some of them really could fit together easily, but I couldn't convince the conveners of that. So we submitted a whole lot of sessions. So what that's meaning is that some people are submitting abstracts to one session when it could potentially be applicable to multiple sessions. So we'll see how that plays out. Okay, and just to remind everybody, once we get past the AGU abstract deadline, the GSA abstract deadline is the 14th. And so I will be sending out more emails. We only have 2 sessions that the Climate Literacy Network identified. There's actually 2 other climate-related sessions, so I've been advertising all 4 of them. But I'll be going after people to submit abstracts to that, too. So, And that works out, that it seems is a little bit different. The sessions are accepted either as an oral session or as a poster session. So the conveners just determine the order of the papers, but if it's an oral session, all the abstracts submitted to it are oral. So that I didn't realize that actually at first, but that is the case. So just in case you're, and there's invited papers to those too. Okay, are there any other announcements? Okay, well, if not, then we'll move on to our discussion for today. And as most of you know, coming out of our discussion last week, many of us felt that it would be really nice to sort of try to identify common messages that members of the Climate Literacy Network or anyone involved in communicating about climate change could use. And so a small group of us, and that includes Caroline Lewis and Martha Shaw and Frank Niepold and myself and Scott Carley, who were on the call last week, trying to sort of start to move that forward, potentially starting with the key findings, which is a link that's on the website, and trying to flesh out maybe a straw man that we can then begin to share with a larger climate literacy network. We also asked Tom Bowman to join the conversation and Susan Hassel. I did get an email from Tom. He is interested but couldn't call in today, so he will engage at some level in the future. So with that, maybe I'll turn this over to either Caroline. I know Caroline's on the phone, or Martha, and we can sort of start maybe with the key findings, or I'm not sure how you envision possibly moving, having this discussion.
Martha, are you there? Oh, you see, now I'm the one that had the conflict, and now she doesn't show up. Okay, great. Scott,
well,
are you
we'll
here?
Help you, Caroline.
I know
we'll
that.
Help you, Caroline.
Is Scott there?
Yes, I'm
Scott's here.
Oh, right, that's my boy. let me just frame the big picture. We really and truly are trying to be proactive in identifying some key elements of media messaging that could work for a national platform to effectively engage the public on climate change. So we talked about this being a public service announcement at a national level, and then we started thinking, okay, what would the talking points be? Who would we partner with? Who would be funding this, and who should we pitch it to? So we're at the very first topic. What would be the main message points? Who's going to partner and how are we going to spread it and get the messengers and the local thing? Our future steps. So today's purpose is to look at the key findings and some of the other documents Tamara put up there and see if this group here could identify some key bullet points of information and messaging that everybody should know. And some of Frank, are you on? Is Frank Niepold on? Some of us were on the CSAP webinar last night that Tony Lisowitz did to sort of frame for that target audience what's the current thinking on climate change communication and which are the main points to cover. That was very informative. So between some of the notes I took last night and some of the documents we're looking at and some of the passion that people were talking about identifying these key messages, should inform at least a working list that we could then deconstruct as to what the points would be. Scott, am I on?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so looking at that key findings document, for example, when Martha and I and Scott started looking at that in Tamara last week, we said, well, you know, the first and the last seem to be the umbrella points that would resonate with every message. If these were public service announcements, that information, and I'm trying to open the document if you all hear me clicking crazily.
Okay, I can read them. The first one is global warming is unequivocal and primarily human-induced.
Right, and
the last one is future climate change and its impacts depend on choices made today.
Right, and so I think I'll just start off with that and then have people jump in with their thoughts, and I'm hoping that, you know, Tamara and Scott are capturing this in terms of creating the straw man or thinking it through. I'll try and take notes too, but I generally can't read my writing at the end. But
okay,
so,
well, I'm taking notes here, so...
Thank you. But what do you think? Let me just throw it out there. What do you think? I mean, the fact that it's a fact and the fact that people want optimism and hope and direction make me think that some versions of that first and last thing could be the correct umbrella or anchor for the series of PSAs or messages we're hoping to get out. And
This is Tamara. My concern is that I think that we have to really think in terms of a balance between the overarching message that we want to get out and making it relevant to the people who are hearing it. And what I hear over and over again is that people need to see how it impacts them, their communities, in their local environment. And I think that that's a real hard line to walk because we do
and
want
I
an
think,
overarching message.
You're right. And I think, let me just for the sake of my sanity explain what the message came across from Tony in that webinar last night. This is the Yale Forum on Climate Change and all of their current studies on who's hearing what and what their message is and their receptivity and all of that. So his main 5 points are knowing that those of us in the teaching world have direct audiences in formal education that we could influence. The rank and file of society is not going to take climate change 101 and get the basic science we seek. So he identified five main points that when we talk, we must communicate. One was it's real and it's happening. Two, that it's us, it's anthropogenic. Three, that undetected, it has serious implications for humans and diverse ecosystems on the planet. Four, that the majority of scientists absolutely agree with the first three statements, that it's real, it's anthropogenic, and undetected. And then the last one, fifth, was a whole range of viable solutions exist and can be implemented. So these are like gateway beliefs. So for me, Tamara, that was framing the reality of the messages that people want to get. And then the only thing that he and everybody else added was localizing it so that it has meaning for them and has relevance. So maybe that's a good framework because less is more. And the purpose of this, for me anyway, of this whole effort is to try and get that first surface layer of information and fact out to the public, hoping they will go deeper and get more. But what are the essential points they need to hear on a national level from credible sources?
Well, I think we can start with those 5 points because one and two go straight to the key finding number one.
Right.
Global warming
I think four also does.
What?
I think four also does. Scientists agree that these are points are true.
Yep, that's true. So
that's what's underlying. It's unequivocal, so that's what's underneath that.
Correct.
So that's really pretty
and
powerful.
And I think, and then serious implications for human and ecosystem seems to be in some of the in-between ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then the number five seems to, it's not exactly the same as, but it goes along with number 10.
Yeah.
And so if we could switch the order, because I think localizing it gets to all of those others in between.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the way I would see this is if we could frame it in and using those five message points and then that fifth one, the viable solutions exist, I think things just have to be customized for different kinds of communities. And that's a huge job. I mean, those won't be simple. It's anybody who's using the messages would have to be able to have access to whatever it is they need to make it customizable or relevant to their own audience.
Well, here's a thought. If these are going to be true national PSAs and they're going to be airing locally, the message could be generic enough, and the solution, the viable solutions, could end on a local level with to learn more, visit miamidadecounty.gov/climate. So we're sending them to a website to get the richness of what each community is doing and planning. I mean, it might be at least a way to start it. I think if we get bogged down and localizing it for everybody before we go live, we never go live.
No, I understand that. It's just that piece just has to be built in so that it's not a hard thing for somebody in a local environment to do. We might do a few examples of how it might be done easily.
The nice thing is that if you have a national spot, that sort of last slide that links to the local website would be really easy to do, just technically. And I really like that idea that it sort of ends and then pushes, encourages you to look at something that is very much of your own community. I think that's quite workable.
This is Karen, and I totally agree with that idea. The other thing that I want to add, though, from Tony's comments yesterday, is the importance of the serious consequences for human health that are really not mentioned. And he stressed that. And the other thing that he stressed is that knowledge is necessary but insufficient in the importance of hitting at things that people value. And human health, and especially children's health, I think is a really powerful message that we have to remember.
Mm-hmm.
No, and he identified that as a clear void in the mental models that people are, they get the melting ice, but that is so remote that it allows them the time and space distance they want to have with this whole concept. So, I mean, what Karen just said is exactly what Tony said, is that get that mental image in their heads about the human health effect, because they have the ice and the ozone as their two big images right now. And I agree, Karen, we need to make sure health is a unifying message.
Can I jump in here and just say that I also think that water is a unifying message as well.
Water.
Because it's received a lot of attention this year because the entire country seems to be in a drought. But last year, of course, Texas suffered tremendously. And it's a message that really resonates with lots of people. They can understand what it means when they don't have the water that they need, the water to put out fires. And there's a link right there, an automatic link to the health consequences of having dust storms, for example. So I almost think that those could be interchangeable: health, water, and maybe something else.
Extreme weather is something else, I think. Extreme weather.
Well, if we look again, I think we're all saying the perfect things, and we need to capture them and put them in categories. So if we look at health. Mm-hmm. And the impact on human health of climate change as a climate change disruptor. He liked that word, Tony, climate disruption, and that people could identify with health. And we look at exactly what the person who just spoke said about water and the food and disease and the changes that are coming, the disruption in climate that's triggering these things. Those could clump on the human health. And then somebody just said something pretty great, but I think it was a little tangentially off from that. So I'm just trying to summarize to see if we could put health in one basket for now.
I've done is I've taken some notes and identified three areas now: water, food, and human health.
You see, what I'm thinking is human health is the circle around the water and food, rather than them being three separate things.
It might be useful to just say human well-being, because I think people are going to get thirsty and hungry before they're going to get sick, and I think there's substantial research that supports that.
Yeah. Wonderful. So, Tamara, maybe the circle could be human well-being. And in human well-being, issues such as food and water and heat and drought and all of those things that come out that affect our crops and everything else kind of link in there. I like that.
Mm-hmm. I think you need one message, though. It's usually hard to do a PSA message. The message is
Your words are cutting in and out. I'm not sure who this is, but I'm not hearing all your words.
I think the message should be what you want people to do, which is lower emissions, I believe.
Yeah, so I think what we're doing
the thing is that I don't think that the thing is we're trying to think of ways that it makes it relevant to people, and telling people you want them to reduce emissions isn't going to be compelling. I mean, doing something so that they increase their well-being, that may be more compelling.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think
that means lowering their emissions.
This is a straw man already. I think we need to get some fluidity for the next 15 minutes and then start collapsing and combining and prioritizing. Because the need to hear the good thinking from you all, I think you're right with Admata that says, you know, people are looking for that information, but they're looking for everything. And what we're trying to decide is what can't be kept secret anymore to people who are almost illiterate but will hear an ad on TV and think, yeah. So to me, the fact that all the scientists believe this is important, to me, food, water, and energy. So I think if we just keep the discussion going a little bit more and then we spend the last 20 minutes saying, all right, let's tease it out and put it in piles and see what the main points are.
I just want to push back a little bit on the human well-being versus human health. To the average everyday mom or dad, if they have a kid that has asthma, which is a major impact from, you know, all you have to do is look at the CDC webpage of climate change. Asthma, childhood asthma, is just prolific. And if you want to hit at the heart, which is, you know, the values that a parent holds dear, it's my kid's health. It's not my kid's well-being. I think health is a bit of a different message.
Mm-hmm.
If we're not talking about, you know, climate change people, we're talking about everyday Americans.
Yeah, but I think the speaker who suggested it was thinking in a broader umbrella, but I do think human health and well-being give us the umbrella we want, because I agree with you. I think, you know, we're looking at America and needing to get them aware, but, you know, insect-borne vectors, the spread of disease,
yes,
and the asthma and the lung and the everything else, those are serious health effects. I just came out of a two-hour workshop on that, and I just want to dig a hole on the health implications for humankind. So I agree with you, Karen, and maybe for now we just say it'll be called human health and well-being, that kind of area, so we can maybe include a little bit more.
I think I agree with that, because there's still a lot that needs to be better understood about the connection between climate and human health. And so we're not quite as sure about these things as we are about the evidence that we have in support of climate change or what it's doing to our water resources. Those are so much more straightforward, I think.
Other thoughts?
I think I can depend on my city to get water to me. I can't depend on my city to make my child healthy.
Well, you know, the issue is, can you depend on them to get you the clean water?
If you're talking about pollution, then you're not talking about climate change.
I think if you live in the West, you can't really, depending on your city to get you water, pardon?
I was just going to say, we certainly know that in Texas.
Well, we know that from other parts of the West, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we also know we can't have population growth and provide enough water. I mean, the argument gets convoluted at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, there are strategies that other countries have for dealing with water shortages that Americans have never had to deal with. I mean, for example, locking off your water for 10 hours a day and you only have it between, you know, 8 a.m. and 10 p.m. or having to go and actually walk for it. These are really... I've experienced that, and I can almost see it as a possibility in the area where I live. In fact, there are certain communities right outside of Austin. I'm based in Austin, where they are trucking in water. And, of course, these are, lower-income neighborhoods, but they do not have access to water except the water that comes in on a truck.
If we were to pull back a bit,
mm-hmm.
And we have a 30-second PSA, what is the take-home? I want to go back to something that I think Marta said, which is what is the take-home that you want people to go away with? What is the, five or six words message?
It's real. It's us. If unchecked, it's what we just talked about, that it's real. I mean, I personally
go ahead.
Want the web to be very broad. I think if we start to... We're going to maybe have the layers of detail in a 30-second PSA with the right designer, be able to give some minutia facts in there. But the big picture takeaway message needs to be that it's real, that it's us, that unchecked they have serious consequences for human health and well-being and most ecosystems on Earth that we know, that there's consensus, unequivocal consensus, and that there are viable solutions and choices to be made now. So if those are the sustaining messages, we can clump what we're talking about now under these particular things.
Well, maybe what we want to think in terms of is we have this overarching umbrella, and then under that there's the bullet points of energy, water, and what was the other one? Food, that you could have different public service announcements focused around each of those. The other possibility, and I've seen, we have an effort here in Massachusetts. That's out of the University of Massachusetts Lowell in partnership with a summer program in high school in which the students learn some of the science around climate change, and then they create media pieces that they then air in their community. So then you have the students develop a sense that they develop this piece that is most relevant to them and that they want to get out as a message in their own community. So there's where you can build in the local relevance of this is to potentially have those. So you could potentially have these public service announcements being created by students as part of, you can either have contests for them or part of summer programs in which they sort of learn the science and then communicate it. Because I think that once you have a student trying to learn how to figure out how to communicate this effectively and they see how hard that is, it becomes compelling. And I can tell you one thing that was interesting is that these high school students were in the summer program for 5 weeks and their parents had no idea what they were doing until they came to the public airing of these media pieces. So that was kind of interesting.
Well, Tamara, I think that I live for that kind of engagement and having the audience do the work and the thinking. It's kind of how I operate. But I think the purpose of this effort was much more of to validate all of these on-the-ground good efforts with
mm-hmm.
a sort of expertise.
I think that
what we're trying to do is in 6 months, right after elections, get these PSAs up and airing around the country and in local communities that create more relevance, but that they're the same six or seven playing everywhere, and we're trying to message at a very broad level so it validates the on-the-ground work that we're all doing. So it's more of a national validation with the common
mm-hmm.
messages. And I don't think
our script
is going to be adhered to
completely. I have very little confidence in 30-second PSAs on television. I don't think it's the way people get information anymore. And, you're begging for somebody to run it, and they're not going to run it during prime time. So, I don't...
No, but I think that these can be put up in lots of places. They don't have to only be on television.
Correct.
I think that they
can be
on YouTube and on...
Every media form, yeah. On radio, on Twitter, on everything. I don't think they're stagnant. I have the schools already wanting to run with their morning PSAs at ribbon on the bottom. I have schools that will take these points on and run it there. So they're not just about the prime time announcements, but they should be everywhere. I mean, there's a sort of a blanketing approach. If we could, I don't even know if this is pie in the sky, but the idea of
I think
a national
the audience.
Yeah.
You've got the Earth Day Network. I mean, I think they really are on top of things because they have engagement and commitments and interactivity and scoring and contests and all. And I think you get a lot more action when people are engaging physically in something. I thought we had a really nice idea about the competition among messages among scientists and the popular voting and all that.
So how many different PSAs do you think make sense? Because it seems to me that if we have this overarching umbrella and then have one that focuses on each of the underlying pieces of the puzzle, which is the energy and the food and water and potentially maybe two or three more, how many are we thinking might be a useful number?
I think if you're just talking about PSAs, you know, one-dimensional, then, you know, Lynn Cherry, and there's a lot of people, those that already have been developed, the youth voices on climate change and a lot. I don't know if you need to develop more of the, you know,
I think if we want to sort of have this consistent, the reason for developing more would be to make some consistency across them so that when somebody sees the one on water, it reminds them of the one on energy. And so it's
right.
Sort of like a suite of them, so it reinforces that message.
And my sense is that you just made a really good point there, is that they need to reinforce one another, but they also need to be able to stand alone. So if somebody
mm-hmm.
doesn't happen across the one on water or children's health, you know, they understand the core message. So you have to come up with the core message, and it sort of becomes the, you know, there's a tagline.
Right.
There's a tagline that hits across every single one of these, and there's sort of a beginning and an end, and the middle is what might change.
Right.
Well, that's what I think, that the human health and well-being, I mean, maybe the words need to be different, but I think that could be the overarching thing, where the elements that address human health and well-being can be that middle piece that is gets at the different aspects
mm-hmm.
of the impact.
This is Mark. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're very quiet, but I can hear you.
Yeah, I've just been listening in, and it's been an interesting discussion. I just wanted to share a couple quick thoughts.
Can't hear you now.
I was reading the National Geographic survey called Green Net, a survey they've done internationally, and one really interesting finding of that, they're looking at green consumers around the world, and the people that are have the greenest buying behaviors, consumer behaviors, are India, China, and another part of the developing world. And Americans are the least concerned, even though, you know, over 30% of our consumers are green consumers. You know, the problem is we don't, compared to these other countries, we feel the least guilty about our impact on the environment.
So, Mark, let me just to make sure I understood. So, are you saying that India and China, the people are more concerned than those in the United States, or that their practices are more green than those in the United States?
Both, and they feel more.
A little bit louder, Mark.
Okay, and they feel more guilty than anybody else, in comparison, particularly to the United States. So, you know, I think that's all just sort of background for my point of what are we asking people to do? And I think that on some level, we need to ask them to become climate and energy smart, sort of challenge them to really understand that this is a serious situation and there's an urgency to it. Maybe a little bit of guilt could if it's well handled, could work, although that's tricky to do. You know, I think the key thing here is that it's not just reducing emissions; it's preparing our communities for changes that are already well underway. Whether it's wildfires in the West or freshwater issues, which basically is becoming more and more, no matter where you are, that's an issue. And, you know, we're just so incredibly unprepared because of the denial and the, you know, manufactured confusion from vested interests. And the question is, how will these PSAs kind of cut through that and motivate people, you know, not just make them feel guilty or make them want to tune out because it's overwhelming, but really feel like they can do something to make a difference.
You know, that's kind of beautiful, Mark. And I think it needs to be said that we need to be asking them something, and not in these words. So what I just did with my tribe of Clio Institute members, followers, advisors, and so on, is I've just said the term that climate literacy is a journey, and that I am expecting everyone begins or has begun that journey. And so I think maybe not those words, but the idea that humankind is, that our responsibility, what's our role, is to steep ourselves in information and understand the role of climate in our lives. So towards climate literacy might be a good takeaway, and a website that goes www.nih.gov, and you take them right to the National Institutes of Health on climate, or some site that's a good beginning for them, Clearinghouse, might be good. Because if we have to do something, we have to have them change their individual behaviors, and you can't start, I don't think, saying, you could say the usual, turn off the lights, drive less, and all of that stuff, but those are the messages they're getting. They're not getting the big reason why they should buy into this.
Okay, so I think that if we want to try to, maybe we should go back to the key findings and see if there are other items besides what we've identified as energy, water, and food as potential focus for some of these. I think those are pretty comprehensive, but let's see if we go to some of the others. Well, number two is climate changes are underway in the United States and are projected to grow. So that's more general.
It's real.
Widespread
climate-related
that goes back to it being real, yeah. And so does number three. Widespread climate-related impacts are occurring now and are expected to increase. So number four, climate change will stress water resources. So there's the water. And crop and livestock production will be increasingly challenged. Let's get that food. Coastal areas are at increased risk from sea level rise and storm surge. That's actually different than the ones that we've been talking about.
That's extreme weather to me.
Right. So, would an individual item, you know, be on the order of magnitude of food, be extreme weather?
Yeah. For those of you who weren't on Tony's deal last night, he showed current data that shows the large majority of people believe climate change makes extreme weather worse than it would be otherwise. And I think he encouraged that we all build on that idea that has taken fire recently.
I mean, that's been something that scientists have been saying for quite a while, and I think that people are beginning to realize that. So I actually think that might be another item in our list of... because sea level rise is a little bit different than extreme weather, but storm surge is certainly in that category.
Mm-hmm. One question I have about extreme weather, though, is that there are events that we consider to be extreme, like a warm winter in the Northeast, but that most people, when it's protracted, think of it as a very sort of nice thing that the winter is warmer than it was in the past. So they don't really think of that as an extreme weather event.
That's
true. So you'd have to pick. Basically, that's where you have to the context has to be the public service announcement has to be posed in the context of what's relevant to that community. So, mm-hmm. you know, I kind of like Caroline's idea of, you know, sending them someplace where local activities or local issues are being discussed so that it begins to make that connection. So, but I see it because, I mean, you know, there's the other, and I mean, extreme weather also applies to droughts and, mm-hmm. as well as hurricanes and flooding events. And droughts are protracted, and flooding events usually occur on a shorter time scale.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I guess I just sort of mean that people, I think you're right, Tamara, that it has to be properly depicted so that people understand that some of the things that they might not consider being extreme events actually are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, and remember now, these PSAs are not going to accomplish everything we want. I mean, this whole using the steroid analogy is kind of beautiful, but, you know, maybe one of the links could have that. So I think it's going to take a lot for people to get everything we want them to know. I've spent 2.5 years immersed on this, and I'm telling you, I have not even on the tip of the iceberg. So back to the big picture messages we want them to know when they read about sea level rise, when they read about ocean acidification, when they hear about, you know, things happening in their communities, that they're making the connection.
Well, I will tell you that one of the things with respect to sea level rise, I just went. Kathy knows about this. When we had workshops for a project. We had in workshops in Texas with teachers in Texas and in Mississippi. And right after those workshops, I went to the sea level rise summit in Florida, mm-hmm. and their website had pictures that showed the impact that basically showed. Buildings in the city in which the, mm-hmm. at high tide and at low tide where the water was all, you know, was covering the sidewalks at high tide. And I showed this at the workshops to the teachers, and even though sea level rise doesn't impact them directly, it was really very compelling when they saw that this does affect somebody very directly. Mm-hmm.
Well, I did the same thing in Columbus, Ohio, and I showed the pictures, and they go, we're not worried about that. I said, but what you should be worried about is Florida is coming. All of us in Florida have to go somewhere. So you guys be ready. We're coming.
Okay, let's go on to the next one. Number seven is threats to human health will increase. And one of the things that's interesting here is in the description under that, one of the items is extreme weather events. So that was kind of interesting because we were talking about that in number six. And then number eight. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think we need to understand that what we see is very, very logical. Isn't very logical to the general public. You know, Miami real estate on the beach is priced out of the world and selling like hotcakes. Okay, so I think again, I just want to go back to make sure that the umbrella messages are worded properly, like the discussion on human health versus well-being. Those are excellent wordsmithing things we need to factor into trying to get this thing.
But what
forward.
I'll do is I'll take these notes and I'll sort of identify things as the overarching ideas, and then the pieces that are supportive, and then we can begin actually constructing the language that we want to actually use.
Mm-hmm.
Can I say something about? I think it was Mark mentioned. At the very end, that you have to let people know what you're asking them to do, mm-hmm. and I thought a bit about that because I completely agree. But then I get very befuddled because I think in terms of what can we do as individuals, and it seems quite overwhelming. But another thought occurred to me, and that is to indicate what already is being done by state agencies or, you know, local government to address the situation. Because what I find is that there are things that are happening. And, of course, I'm speaking from the perspective of Texas. But there are things that are taking place here that people simply don't know about. You know, they don't know how planning has been informed, water resource planning has been informed by knowledge about climate change or the coastal situation. And so directing them to activities that are already underway could be empowering.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that would have to be sort of on the, a local angle that you would need to bring in.
Well, I actually think that along with these public service announcements, we have sort of a set of guidelines for anybody who wants to actually to use them, aside from the dissemination we might do, that for anybody who wants to use them, to provide some guidelines for making these connections.
So a question that I have is, who do you envision making these? I'm sorry I came to this late, Tamara.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I that's an open question because we don't actually even have funding to do any of this. I think what we wanted to do was to come up with the ideas of what the messages would be and then to pursue how we might get it funded and who would actually make them.
See, I think the public engagement experts who, like Tony is one, but there's so many others, and Tom Bowman, and, you know, there are many. I think they will help tremendously with deconstructing the language and the categories for these bullet points. But, Marta, this is just a concept of trying to get a national message, a series of national messages to sort of validate a lot of the on-the-ground efforts. So the vehicle for getting it done is not defined, and we had, you know, some robust thinking on it, but no traction. Scott, you haven't said anything. What are you thinking? Because I know you're very excited about the potential of this, and I would hate for this hour to end without hearing from you.
Well, one of the points I was going to raise is that there certainly are many communities that have climate action plans, and many of them probably are also at state level. So I just reinforce that notion that there is quite a bit being done that probably is quite hidden. Having worked as a county employee, I know that we did a lot of work internally that many folks really weren't aware of. It would sort of pop up in legislation and sometimes in a written report, but a lot of stuff happens internally. There are really good people working in state and local government, so a lot of this stuff happens. Now, maybe I'm sitting in a fool's paradise here because so much stuff has happened in King County and the Seattle area that, you know, we have certainly been doing a lot of this for, quite frankly, decades, not just a couple of years. But I think that notion of reinforcing what already is being done, especially being done with with legislators and with state and county employees, I think that's a really important message to again recognize that our individual efforts can be magnified by working within the political system and using our voices as individual citizens to make sure that legislation happens. My own experience in doing all this stuff, I was always quite amazed with the power that just a couple of individuals can have in shaping the kinds of legislation and, quite frankly, allocations of funds that can happen within a jurisdiction. And so it's extremely important that even just a few dedicated people put their voices out there. So that's kind of where I go, is kind of what's the nature of the amplifiers here. I agree with everyone that a clear message is really important, and it needs to be simple because there's a clear message being brought by climate deniers or whatever word we want to use for that. And, the other message just gets lost very quickly. It's the old... I'll use it. The 1% get heard much more easily than the 99%. Money talks, remember? It's now legal in this country. Money talks.
I want to just visit these two other of the key findings just so that we cover mm-hmm. them all before the hour is over. Number 8 is just so that if there's additional items we should include in this sort of short list of examples, basically. Climate change, number 8 is climate change will interact with many social and environmental stresses. And things listed under there are pollution, population growth, overuse of resources, urbanization, and other social, economic, and environmental stresses. So just think about that a minute. I'm going to say read number 9 also, and then we can think about whether or not there are overarching issues that might encompass these. The other is thresholds will be crossed, leading to large changes in climate and ecosystems. So the question is there something that, do these address some of the things that we've listed already, which are the food and energy and water, there was one other, extreme weather, or is there something that these, do these address those, or is there something else that these address that we should include in that list, is what I'm asking.
Well, one thing that's interesting in the findings that's missing is energy. It's actually not.
I included that. I listed that as one of them, is energy.
Yeah, but it's interesting. It's not in the findings. I mean, I absolutely agree. It's something that we need to include in our list. But it's interesting that it's not part of the 10 findings.
I think partially. I mean, it probably gets into the number 10, which is the choices. I think energy gets into what we do.
I certainly agree.
And not so much as to what's happening in the environment, which is, I think, what the rest of these things are.
Yeah.
So, but are there anything with respect to social and environmental stresses or thresholds that is an all is a concise way of addressing these two? I'm not sure. I mean, I think that they're
sanitary boundaries thing, Mark. Is Moscow?
Say that again.
The planetary boundaries. Are we crossing? Remember that document that circulated a month or two ago about crossing the planetary boundaries?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't retain a whole lot of that in my head, but I'd remember them interesting. So maybe if we look at those, Tamara, and
right.
See if they refer to anything that we're missing here.
Okay.
That's something from the Stockholm Resilience Center. It's a theme that center focuses on, about 8 or 9 planetary threshold boundaries.
Well, I know from Zoos
and
Gardens. You know,
one of them is climate, and one of them is ocean acidification. There's a bunch of others, too, that are all interrelated.
And biodiversity is definitely a big one.
This is Jim. I think the thresholds one is really important, but I think it's really complicated, and
yeah.
I think it would be too difficult to get into. And I'm kind of approaching the same opinion on the climate change will interact with many social and environmental stresses. I heard Ed Maybach talk a couple months ago, and he distilled it down to something very similar to what we've been saying. It's real, it's us, it's bad, and we can do something about it. And the simplicity of that made that stick in my head. And, I think there's something to be said for trying to avoid those things that take very detailed explanation.
I think I agree with you,
yeah.
Jim. I think that, but I also think that these might be things that are addressed at the next level down, so that for water there are issues with respect to social, environmental, and thresholds, and for energy there is, and for extreme events. So it could be that these are encompassed in the ones we've already listed, because I agree, keeping the message simple and compelling is what, so that it sticks, is probably more important.
Yep. Yep. I agree.
You know, you have to think you probably have maybe 50 words you can use in a
yeah.
spot. That's about it. You know, it's the old 3 slides or 5 slides version. I mean, you think about the kind of political ads that we see all the time. Now, those aren't quite PSAs, but you know, that's about getting a message out very, very succinctly.
Okay, so I think what I'll do, I don't know if anybody else took notes along the way, but what I'll do is I'll create a Google Docs that then I'll share. I'll put the link to it on the website. So and then invite people to contribute their ideas and thoughts about this. That way we can work with one document instead of hunting down emails from everybody.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Okay. Are there any other comments? Okay, I'll just give one more pitch for make sure you submit your AGU abstracts or ask those that you think might be good contributors to do that by tomorrow evening.
Okay.
And we'll talk again next week.
Excellent.
Thank you so much.
Thanks very much.
Okay.
Everyone.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye.
Bye.